Dogger, your thoughts on the trade?
My thoughts. My immediate question is, you know, if they would have held out a little longer, given the lack of options that Stan Bowman and the Blackhawks had they grinded a little longer, could they have gotten a better financial deal than what they ended up taking here? You know, I don't know the answer to that. The critics out there would like to say, yes, absolutely, they did this too soon and they should have grinded and not taken back full salary. And I think that's fair to make that point, to ask that question. Could they have done better if they'd have grinded a little harder? So that's where I begin. Full salary seems odd to me. If Duncan Keith were a free agent this year, I don't believe he would sign a two-year deal worth anywhere near what he's going to get paid for the next 2 years. So that right there, I think, is a question mark. The second question is, why'd they have to give up the draft pick as well? Like, the trade equity in this deal feels to me like, because of the salary the Oilers were taking on, and you know, though they're getting a good player in Duncan Keith, I just wonder why they had to give up the draft pick. So, this is where the answer to that lies. The Oilers believe two things. One, they believe Duncan Keith has a tremendous amount of game left. Despite what the numbers show and the numbers indicate a decline for an aging player, they believe he's got a tremendous amount left to give at 37, 38, 39. It also shows that they are willing to pay for, and maybe in some ways desperate for, Stanley Cup pedigree in their lineup. That is not something they believe they can easily bring to Edmonton, and they were willing to pay a premium for it. So when you combine those two things, I believe that's where their head is at on why they did this at full salary.
Yeah, it's that's the valid criticism for me, and it's the part I don't understand. Now, we'll wait till the trade call is official, and hey, maybe there's a shocking turn of events, but I'm not holding my breath on that. So now, though, you look ahead to the expansion draft, and Keith, of course, has no movement clause moves with him, so I don't think Edmonton's requiring him to then not protect him. So he's protected. Nurse is protected. I assume at this point Ethan Bear would obviously be protected, which, you know, if there's an Adam Larson contract coming, Shogger, then it's probably not coming until after July 21st.
Yeah, if they can make that work with Larson's camp to put a deal in place and just not make it official till after the expansion draft, that's ideal. There's a risk involved in that, and it depends on how negotiations have gone, right? If negotiations have gone smooth and you're really confident and you feel good about where you're at and you can cook the deal for a couple of weeks, then you do that. If it was a push and it was a grind and you finally got them in the headspace to accept something, do you want to give them a couple of weeks to reconsider? Maybe not. So in an ideal world, they can push that deal till after. If not, and if they have to sign him, then their structure of protection changes. Then there's no more going 7-3-1 because they will absolutely have to protect their four top four defensemen.
And well, so what are you going to expose Yamamoto?
Well, that's the issue, right? That's the issue because it becomes really difficult at that point. So, yeah, that's where it gets tricky, bud. And that's why it's really ideal if they can get this deal done.
The Duncan Keith trade right now is questionable. If it somehow leads him having exposed someone who you never thought was going to be protected, it would be, I could see fans saying, I'm done. Like, that would be absolute, it's insane. Yeah. There's no way. To me, the Oilers protection list is pretty straightforward now. And unless there's some deal that we don't know about coming in the next 6 days, it seems pretty obvious they're going 7-3. And then they'll move on from there. Because anything else, if they somehow have to go 4-4, and that means you expose one of Nugent Hopkins, Puljujärvi, and Yamamoto and lose one of them to go just to get Duncan Keith, well, dude, that would I just can't see that happening.
Right. Yeah, and they have to have that worked out right now. If they made this trade without having that worked out, then that's crazy. So my guess is that it's all worked out and all sorted out. If not, they just gave J.P. Barry a bunch of leverage. You know, if they don't have an agreement in place right now, J.P. Barry's looking at him going, look, we're not going to agree to your deal until you give us the number we want. And we're willing to go to market while it puts them in a tough spot, right? So we'll see what happens there. But the question here, Bud, is how much game does Duncan Keith have left? It's the single biggest question in this transaction. And, you know, I didn't see him play much this year. The Oilers are placing a significant bet that he's got a ton of game left. And they'll either be right about that or they'll be wrong about that. And that's where the evaluation in this trade lies, how Duncan Keith plays.
Oh, well, of course. There's no question about it. They obviously believe he can play. You know, right now I do think he's their second-best left defenseman. Now, we can argue that that will illustrate that there's, you know, a lack of depth in the organization. Totally valid. So, you know, they've still got to get another left defenseman, I would believe. So, you know, we'll see what...
Sorry to interrupt you. I talked to a guy that was on that Chicago team that won back in the day. And what he told me was Duncan Keith is an absolute beast in terms of his workout habits and his physicality, like the way he approaches being a professional athlete. He's an absolute beast, and that he is fantastic with younger players in the organization. So I know there's like a legion of people out there, you know, with calculators in their hands rolling their eyes at me right now. But I'm here to tell you, the Oilers were desperate for some Stanley Cup pedigree and some leadership in this way. And I think they were willing to pay a bit of a premium to get it. And I think those things do matter a tremendous amount to them. So you can agree or disagree with whether that should be important or not. They firmly believe that's a huge part of what they're getting in Duncan Keith, and I think they were willing to pay for that. You know, in some way, that's a chunk of why they paid what they paid.
Yeah.
But I was told that just a beast, you know, and that's great with the younger players. And so there are some times where that could be pretty meaningful.
Oh, I don't discount that. I've always said this, though. Leadership, when you're in a big role, matters more than it's like thinking you're going to go out and acquire a third line guy in Tampa Bay and suddenly, because they won two cups. And I like Barkley Goudreau and Blake Coleman, but they're going to come in and suddenly be able to be excellent leaders on your team. Maybe for your bottom six guys, but it's just, you know, in order to be a good leader, for the most part, you have to play a significant role in the team. It's just any team you've ever played on. So
Duncan Keith is going to play 20 minutes a night next year.
Okay. And so, well, then he's going to have to play well. So leadership's a bonus if he plays well.
He's going to occupy a massive part of the Oilers' time on ice next year. I mean, they're bringing him in fully expecting the guy to be 18 to 21 minutes a night as a second pairing, a lock on their second pairing. They're not bringing him in with any expectations whatsoever that he will drop to being a third pairing defenseman in either of the 2 years that they have him. They believe they have to, or they're crazy for making this trade. You know, they wanted Stanley Cup pedigree that's going to play. They don't want somebody on their fourth line or in and out of the lineup who's won a couple of cups. They want Stanley Cup pedigree on the ice a lot when it matters. And if you look around the league right now, how many three-time Stanley Cup champions would you be able to find that could play on your second pairing, who want to come to Edmonton, and you know, who you can get to give you that element? So if you place a premium on that element, and I believe the Oilers do, this guy was a fantastic option, and they paid money for that option.
No, it's, yeah, we'll see. This is why they get paid to do it, and we'll see if it works out. If it does,
exactly,
then you applaud them and say, great. Is it a risky deal with no cap retention? 100%. So, we'll find out kind of from here where it pays off. Cause the truth is the Oilers don't, cause we're getting a lot of texts, you know, why wouldn't they have traded guys for Seth Jones or Eichel? Here's the truth. Edmonton doesn't have, unless you're willing to trade like Broberg or Bouchard, and Broberg wouldn't do it himself, but if Bouchard or Broberg or Holloway or Puljujärvi, and even Puljujärvi's probably not a main starting point yet, Edmonton doesn't have tons of pieces to go dangle to get those really good available guys right now that Frank Saravelli had on his top trade targets that came out today. They don't have that in the organization.
I agree. They do, but they're not players that they want to give up, right? They're not players that they're willing to part with. They're not players they're willing to give up. So if you're the Oilers and you're dealing from a position of strength and you're willing to try and get something but you need to risk something, what are you willing to risk? So there's potential reward with Duncan Keith. What are you willing to risk? Well, it's not going to be your top-end prospects. It's not going to be, you know, a top draft pick. They're willing to risk cap space. They're willing to risk some of the excess cap space that they have, that they're going to wander into free agency. They probably would have had to overpay $500,000, $1 million on a second pairing left shot defenseman to move the dial in their second pairing. So they're saying, well, we know what Duncan Keith is. They believe they know what Duncan Keith is. He provides an element that they really want. And they know what his price tag is. They're not going to be bidding against other people. And so they went ahead and took the risk with the cap space. So, again, I'm not saying I agree with it. I can't help but think that grinding a little longer on this, given Chicago's lack of options, maybe could have produced a better financial result for them trade-wise. And I wonder about that. But going into free agency, needing a second pairing left shot defenseman, there's risk in that too, that you're going to overpay somebody that's not going to be what you need, and you can run into trouble. So they believe they've put a, you know, a pretty close to a sure bet second pairing guy in there that ticks the boxes of the experience of the championship level experience and the swagger. So I think they're, honestly, I think they're tickled today. You know, I think they're real happy that they've got Duncan Keith. And the Oilers fans, that might drive them nuts. But I said from the beginning, this is not going to be a James Neal contract to Chicago to take Duncan Keith. That is not the way this is viewed. And people kind of went a little berserk when I said that. But I believed all along this was the shape of this deal.
Ryan Rashog joins us from TSN. Well, Shar, obviously their offseason, you know, this is just the start of it. They've got lots of other decisions to make. One that hasn't had a lot of talk is Mike Smith. You think Mike Smith gets signed before the 18th, or they just, you know, they protect Skinner and expose Costin and go from there and then work on Smith after? What do you think happens there?
Yeah, I don't think there's a rush to get Mike Smith done before the expansion draft. I don't think that's, you know, I think they can take some time with that. I think they'll protect Skinner. Costin will be exposed. He won't get taken. You know, Stalock will be out there. And I think they got to make a decision on Koskinen, right? Are they buying him out, or are they retaining salary in a trade? It's kind of one of those two things. There's probably some trade value out there for Koskinen if you're willing to eat enough. And you just have to weigh that off against, you know, the savings if you were to do the buyout. So I think they've got a decision to make on him. I still feel like there's a strong chance James Neal is the one that gets bought out. I feel my gut feeling tells me that. I might be wrong. It might be Koskinen. But I don't think there's a rush to get Smith done, given where they're sitting right now.
Okay. Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us. Shog, quickly, when you look at this trade from a Chicago, like I look at Chicago's blue line, and I don't even think they're going to protect Caleb Jones. Right, because I got Zadorov, Murphy, and DeHaan.
Yeah, I don't have their stuff up in front of me, so I
well, those are their three defensemen. Like, do you think he's better than any of them?
Do they go 7-3-1 for sure? What's their protection situation up front?
Well, up front, you would have Kane, DeBrincat, Taves, Kubalik as four forwards. Then after that, there's Dylan Strome. They have Alex Nylander. So do they believe that Caleb Jones is a better NHL player than either one of those? Or Brett Conley, who they just acquired? Like, I'd be surprised if they're going 4-4.
Yeah, well, maybe they don't believe Caleb Jones will get taken.
Yeah.
You know,
or
maybe
he
they
was,
believe that, yep.
Yeah. So that's an interesting one.
I mean, if you look at it, like, if they expose Caleb Jones and he gets taken, they got rid of Duncan Keith's money and got a third-round pick for doing that, right? If someone takes Jones off their hands, if Seattle does. So would they be upset to lose the asset? I don't know where he fits in their hemisphere, but getting out from underneath Duncan Keith's contract for where they're at and what their trajectory is, you know, I think Stan Bowman did a good job here. I think the longer this went, the more pressure that there was going to be on Bowman. And that, you know, his deal goes away that he's envisioning. Like, I that's the one question I have, is just about the timing of this deal. And if the Oilers would have held on and let the pressure turn up, see how much heat Duncan Keith and his camp would put on Chicago to get that deal. If it didn't, you know, if it didn't change. I mean, look at what the return was for Taylor Hall, because there was nobody to negotiate with. It was a limited market, and they just let it go and let it go and let it go. And then all of a sudden, when the deal happened, it was like, yeah, that's literally all that was there, because when there's not that many Sooners, that's the way the market is. So I just wonder what more time would have done to this deal. But I don't believe the Oilers have looked at it that way. I think the Oilers looked at it like they had a chance to get Duncan Keith, a player that their intel says has lots left, and they did what was required to make sure they got him. I think that was the headspace they came at this whole thing from the beginning, and got the player that they feel will help. And sure, he makes too much money, but has all these other intangibles, and it's only 2 years, so it's not like it's a six-year deal. And I think the Oilers are really happy today, despite all of the mayhem happening all over the place as people evaluate this thing. So it's funny. I think there's definitely a disconnect between the way the Edmonton Oilers view what happened today and the way a huge part of their fan base, and quite frankly, some of us media, you know, and they'll either be right or they'll be wrong. I think they're bullish on Duncan Keith.
Yeah, well, we'll hope they're right for their sake. Like, otherwise, it's a continuation of terrible trades. Like, I looked at Taylor Hall trade from the day it was made. I thought it was awful. The Griffin Reinhardt trade, I said the same thing. The Jordan Eberle one, didn't like it either. And the team hasn't recovered from that. Now, the good news is the assets they gave up in this deal, not a major loss, but it really is going to impact their cap flexibility moving forward. So Duncan Keith has to play well, or this is automatic. Like, even if Duncan Keith plays okay in your third pair, it's still going to be looked at as a meh trade.
Terrible.
Because
Duncan Keith can't spend retention. He can't spend any time on the third pairing. He can't. He can't be a $5.5 million third pairing defenseman. Yeah. If that happens, it was a terrible trade. Duncan Keith needs to be in the Oilers' top four, unless Philip Broberg absolutely comes and blows the doors off and it's ridiculous what he does, then sure. But if Duncan Keith is playing on a third pairing because that's all he can handle, this was a terrible trade. I don't think the Oilers believe that the way it's at with Duncan Keith right now.
We'll see if their belief is right or wrong. Thanks, Sugar. Have a good one.
That's why they get paid the big bucks too, right, pal?
Yeah, we'll see.